Welcome back. We're on Nini and the Car Doctor. Let's stop and think about for a minute the amount of money that's been invested over the years in emission controls. It's probably in the tune of billions with a B. And it's interesting to note that just this past week, a study came out and it's blaming 25% of the cars, so a quarter of the fleet, for over 90% of the pollution. And you've got to ask yourself, well, as a taxpayer, I want to know what the heck we're doing with all this money and where is it going? And then number one, number two, why is it we're allowing 25% of the fleet to produce 90% of the pollution without finding ways to circumvent it? And just, I've got all sorts of questions. And as always in this case, when I get into a scenario like this, I always go to my answer guy, Paul Eisenstein, the Detroit Bureau, thedetroitbureau.com. Paul, are you there, sir?
Hey, good to be with you.
Good to be back. Good to have you back. How are the cats? I always ask that question. As a cat owner, I have to ask that question first.
They are doing fine. I'm trying to teach the Foz to do more tricks. He's already high-fiving, and I haven't quite been able to get him to clean the windows. I'm working on that.
I've come to the conclusion cats become like their owners. My middle daughter, the Army kid, is with us for a couple of months. I'm going back through basic training again. I'm not exactly sure why. But she had to leave on some Army stuff, and she left the kitten with us. The other day I caught the kitten climbing the screen door in the kitchen like a soldier going over the side of the ship, you know, the cargo netting thing. And I'm thinking, how is this possible? But anyway, interesting article, Paul. 25% of the cars contribute 90% of the pollution? What's that about?
Well, by the way, I don't think this is really the first time we have seen or heard this. I believe that there's been some earlier studies. This is a fairly comprehensive one done out of Toronto, though it clearly applies to the U.S. as well. And by the way, I should point out that the Ontario government has an incredibly tough emissions law in place. So probably some of the worst polluters are already off the road or were, in fact, ordered to be cleaned up. So I wonder if in parts of the United States it's even more pollution from that 25%. I'm down here right now at the Camaro reveal event, which we need to talk to in a few minutes.
Yeah.
And we've got some very early cars here. There was a parade earlier today of 350 old Camaros. And if you go back to some of the earliest ones that have been modded, you know, have different exhaust systems and all, they're wonderful cars. But the reality is, if you were to put a sensor back by the exhaust, I'm sure that they're going to put out 20 times the pollution of the current C5, Camaro 5, never mind the new one that's going to come out, make even lower emissions. So some of that is just the natural reality of old cars with earlier pollution systems, poorly maintained vehicles and the like. And the reality is that some of the newest cars can go cross-country and produce less pollution than some of the older or poorer maintained vehicles can make simply going across town.
But now that Camaro, Paul, that's in the parade this morning, if it's not used as an everyday car, if it's that weekend car, that Sunday car show car, you know, how much pollution is that contributing? Is that what this article focuses on, or is it more so on the 20-year-old daily driver?
No, it's not just that. It's often the 20-year-old daily driver and the poorly maintained vehicles, including newer vehicles that just aren't maintained. You may recall that in a number of states, there are exemptions for old vehicles. They get when they meet a certain age or the like or qualification, they get an exemption from some of the emissions standards. I think California has that, if I recall. So I think a lot of people understand that, yeah, there's some old vehicles that are only going to go out for parades and you know, the occasional run on a beautiful day, so you don't worry about that. But a lot of people don't maintain their vehicles, and it doesn't take a lot of problems with the vehicle to start putting out some pretty heavy smoke. I mean, we've all driven in a tunnel or something, and we see the one guy spewing smoke, and by the time we get to the other end of the tunnel, we're barely able to breathe.
Oh yeah, and we're wishing the guy wasn't there. Well, I can tell you from a real world scenario here in New Jersey, we saw a vehicle just last week, a 95 Mercury Grand Marquis. Now, in Jersey, state inspection is anything 1996 and up is OBD2. It's a plug-in under the dashboard port connector. This is pre-96, so it's a tailpipe test. The issue I had with this car was the check engine light was on. But in Jersey, and I can't say this is every state, I will speak from Jersey experience as a Jersey Motor Vehicle Inspector. In Jersey, the regulations say, and I verified this with regional office before I went and did the inspection, if the check engine light's on, it doesn't affect the vehicle. It's still judged by the tailpipe test. Guess what? The car passed the tailpipe test. So that vehicle's out there, and I happen to know what's wrong with this car. This car has an EGR fault, which is going to produce oxides of nitrogen, which is a big problem for smog.
Right.
And yet, this car passed the test. And I'm saying, why is this being allowed? But I can't yell about the rules. I can only just follow them.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that pumping out enough NOx that it was not flagged by the tailpipe test.
Yep, and not the first time I've run across it. I've seen this of late. Last week was the first one I called on because I said, well, you know, this is the third one in a year. Let me see what's going on. And it was the right procedure. So you know, you just look at this and you say, hey, you know, is there a light at the end of the tunnel? Is it a train or is it a flashlight? And sometimes you wonder, you know, which way is it going? Hey, Paul, can I ask you to stick around for another segment? I want to talk to you about the Camaro real quick, and then we'll let you go. We know you got a lot going on today.
We got some great stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Camaro. I'd also like to talk about real quick. You can get your head around it. The conversation recently came out that in California, the Google cars, they've had, I think, did they have 4 accidents or 8 accidents? 4 were autonomous driven and 4 were driven by people. They've had some accidents already with these vehicles.
Yeah, I think it's up to 12, but we'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that. I want to get your thoughts on that. So, great deal. Stand by. I'm Ron Ananey and the Car Doctor with Paul Eisenstein, thedetroitbureau.com. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We're on Ananey and the Car Doctor. We're here this hour with Paul Eisenstein of the Detroit Bureau. Paul, thanks for taking some time today. We know you're busy. Where exactly are you today, sir?
I'm on Detroit's Belle Isle. It's a riverfront island that's the sort of the Central Park of Detroit.
Right. And there's some big news going on there regarding the Camaro today, correct?
Yeah, we have, I'm looking at it right now, probably about 350 or so classic Camaros here, about 1,000 owners and fans, and we are going to see the 6th generation Camaro unveiled at 4 o'clock Eastern Time. So I'll have something up on the site with the full story and pictures shortly after that.
I saw the test drive yesterday with the GM president, where he took it down the track with a reporter in the car, and they were doing 100, 105 miles an hour with it, and
It's
over 300 horses out of a V6, and, you know, they're raving about the car. What are your first thoughts? Have you had a chance to get close to it?
No, I have not had a chance to get close to it. Phil LeBeau over at CNBC, which, you know, I also do some writing for, he's the only one that I know of so far that has had some serious time with it. I'm not exactly sure how he pulled it off. I have to ask him next time I get him by the throat.
It looked like a fun time.
How'd you do that, Phil? But I can tell you some basics about it. A lot lighter. There's a definite emphasis on lightweighting, which, you know, is one of the hot things in the auto industry these days. One of the reasons is, yes, it improves fuel economy, but the good thing is it also improves performance. Heavy cars, you know, you just got to move a lot more mass, which is a challenge both on a straight line and around a corner.
Right.
And one of the reasons that it is going to be lighter is it's a brand new chassis. And here's the interesting thing. It is going to share the same chassis as the very well-reviewed Cadillac ATS small car, which, you know, has been favorably compared by many of us reviewers to the BMW 3 Series.
Interesting. And I thought a year ago, as I watched these reviews and I watched predictions, it seems that Detroit is going to start to chase European car companies for a while in their designs and their direction.
Well, certainly at the performance level, they're not just giving chase, but in some cases, I think that they're doing a darn good job of perhaps giving the Germans a reason to start looking over their shoulder and even watch them zoom by.
Right.
That ATS the ATS-V, which I happened to drive just a few weeks ago, I think it's going to be hard not to say that it is an absolute stand-up to the BMW M3. Some people will not accept that idea simply because they just won't accept the idea of a BMW M3 not being the top dog. But the reality is, it's a surprisingly strong vehicle. And I don't say that because I'm based here. I mean, you've known me long enough to know I'll take shots at the Detroit Metal, but there's some great stuff coming out of here right now. So I'm going to be very curious to hear a little bit more of the details about the new Camaro. Yes, you're right. They have to be over 300 with that new six-cylinder engine because, if nothing else, they're chasing Mustang. Mustang these days is making, 305 out of the base car?
Yes.
And delivering 31 miles a gallon on top of it.
Yeah, some technology, huh?
And it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it really is. I think the attitude people have to take to the showroom nowadays is you have to be open-minded and look back at something different. I talk to many people, Toyota and Honda owners. I'll lay the wrench there. That are Toyota Honda owners, they're not happy with them, or they won't look at anything but a Toyota Honda. And they ask me my opinion, and I say, you know what? I see lots of problems with a lot of cars, Toyota Honda among them. And I think Ford, GM, and they've all come a long way. And it's time to take a look at everything from everywhere, and don't just be narrow-minded about it. Hey, Paul, in our last 2 minutes, what can you comment about the Google autonomous driving vehicle?
Well, first of all, you mentioned before the break about them having crashes. Yeah, it turns out that I think they said they've had about a dozen since they began the test program, 6 or 8 years ago. They claim that not a single one of them was actually caused by the Google mobiles themselves. So far, these have just been converted vehicles using autonomous technology. Half of them have occurred with the driver in control, half of them with the vehicle in autonomous mode. And most of them have occurred when people have rear-ended the Google cars. There's not much you can do if you are driving a vehicle and somebody decides not to stop and rear-ends you.
Right.
That's not the autonomous vehicle's fault. Several others have been, well, for example, they were stopped waiting to make a left turn and somebody ran into the vehicle. Again, not much you can do.
Yeah, sure.
So far, the information we have is that this is not a case of the autonomous technology failing, but just simply the fact that there are some accidents that you simply cannot protect against no matter what you do.
And it makes the case for, I read a comment, and we'll leave it here, that in the coming years, the government is pushing for more inter-vehicle communication to avoid crashes like that and to allow vehicles to space themselves out automatically.
Yeah, we're probably going to see some regulations come shortly for what they call V2V, or vehicle-to-vehicle communications. So, for example, if your vehicle, you're not stopping for the red light, it'll blast a signal out. Anybody equipped to receive that signal would get a warning, you know, wait before you go start up at your red light when it turns green because somebody's going to run. By the way, one of the most interesting things that I have done in the last few months was not driving an autonomous car. I actually got to be in the autonomous Freightliner 18-wheeler, 70,000 pounds, of self-driving truck.
Listen, we've got to save that. We've got to save that story for the next time. So add that to the list because we're going to run out of time. But that sounds like a great experience. Paul, the website, once again, where we can see pictures of the Camaro later on today or tomorrow?
TheDetroitBureau.com. TheDetroitBureau.com.
As always, sir, thank you for your time. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Been a pleasure to talk to you as always. Take care.
Take good care. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We are back right after this.